Oh, hi. Greetings. This is the automatically deleted husband. Automatically deleted again. The day was absolutely fantastic. I mean, I had so many people here at the house. It was ridiculous. All sorts of, especially sports reporters from all over the world. They were here to watch me as I got to the two-third point on my attempt to make a million jumping jacks in 5 years. I'm at two-thirds now. I mean, the fanfare and the joy was magnificent. I'm at 666,880, and I had an issue. I actually manually added these things up, and now it's automatic. So every time I stick it in, I get the exact count. Anyway, obviously. no one came to my house today, but anyway, I got two-thirds. I set the goal to be there to do a million in 5 years. I'm at 2 years, and I'm at two-thirds of the way. And now I have the goal to do the 1 millionth on December 8th of this year. And in order to make that, I have to slow down my pace. So what I think I'm going to do is kind of try to slow down, but at the same time, get stricter in my form. You know, because one of the things I do see in myself, well, the best example is when we were at March 4th of last year. I did my 256 at the top of Big Frog. I started fair. By the time I got to the end, it was pathetic. And the following day, I did 286 in my front yard just to, so I can do a little bit better. But if I stay with, 1,024 a day, I'm gonna be too early. So I'm going to probably try to slow down. And because the things I'm conscious of is... I'm conscious that I want to make sure that my hands are above the head. On occasion, what I've done is actually do it where my hands cross. And I was for a while going back and forth just because I wanted to make sure I didn't form a bad form. So it's either directly above the head, and then the other thing is go high, and of course there is the issue about, coming together, slapping your hands together way up high. That's another thing that's possible. I've done that occasionally, which is because this is where you have the kind of the clap all the time. So I'll probably work on that a bit because I do find, when I start my morning, do the 512, and they're a little weaker. Whereas the next thing I do is a 128 when I do the smoothie, because you look in all the best cookbooks that show how to make a smoothie, and all of them say you have to do 128 jumpy jacks while the blender is running. I mean, this is universal. Yeah, if you can find that, good luck. Anyway, when I do those, that 128, it's a much more solid form. I'm either, getting to the point that my hands either come together or they cross. And occasionally I do the reach up. And the other thing when they come down is I still have my arm bent. It comes down all the way, but so I want to make sure it comes all the way down. The other thing is the legs. I mean, the photo, the image I have of when I'm at the top of Buzzard Point, my legs were apart reasonably well. But what I found is wearing boots, it's harder. They don't go, it's more effort because I'm here doing it barefoot. But the other thing I found in order to get width, instead of my feet like this and then out, my feet are like this. So they're, kind of pigeon-toed, pointed in, but the legs get further out. And I find that seems to work best. The reason I started doing that is I actually watched a, a couple years ago, a woman doing jumping jacks. And I noticed that's what she did. I thought about that for a moment. You know, how much of it is because that's a female body and I have a male body. But the other thing is, I have been concerned about sometimes, what I do well, I think of, is when I do that, I may not get far apart, but I get a good hop. My concern is getting up in the air with my feet. Because of the fact I'm barefoot, I get some good height. My heels basically never hit the ground. I'm up and out, back, but the heels never hit the ground again for the entire time. They get close to the ground. They don't hit the ground. So I'm on my toes, which I think is good. But I do think I need to get more distance. So my guess is, an educated guess, I started 2 years ago and, you know, I was doing my first month, I did 16,000 jumping jacks. Last month I did 40,000. So, you know, a little bit more, you know, because I was doing basically a maximum of 256 at a time. I did last month, I did once 1,024 and I once did 2,048. And I don't know if I'll ever do that one again. That was, that was a little ridiculous. But anyway, and I don't know how good the form was. I wasn't watching. But either way. The joy is I'm at 40% of the time, but I'm, you know, or, you know, 2/5, but I'm at 2/3 or 66%, 67% of the distance. So I was encouraged by that. So that again is, you know, because my postcard today, was to George. I remember the name, George. George, I just passed the 2/3 point on my way to a million jumping jacks. I need to slow down my rate, to time it for mom's birthday. Please join me for that day, Lord willing, on the top of Big Frog Mountain. Love, Dad. Well, that went out today. A couple of weeks, I'll probably have it back, right? Great. I mentioned I sent the postcard to Jim Cross yesterday, and there was a little frustration, perhaps in my tone of the way I wrote that, because I remember, he made a comment to my wife that when I become an older fellow, I guess perhaps especially because, I'm a software guy and I'm just a guy in general, that when I got older, I'd probably be, a guy who would just pot belly sit down all the time. And I think it was because I've seen a lot of pictures of him and even younger. But that's not what happened, is it? And, you know, it was a few months ago. The photo says September. I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll assume it's right. I was taking a hike. Wow. And taking a normal path. I take a particular path because I go through neighborhoods rather than the major streets. There is one segment that I walk less than a quarter mile on Georgetown. And Georgetown, was it Boulevard? Anyway, Georgetown. And I don't like it at all because some of it, I'm in a apartment, their driveway in front. But for part of it, I'm on a narrow part of the edge of the road, and it's a high traffic road. It's a two-lane road, but it's a high traffic road. And so I don't like that spot at all. And so as soon as I can, I get off it and walk through a neighborhood instead of continuing on it, which is another possibility. So I take this turn, I have to go up a hill, modest hill, and then do a little wrapping, then go down the hill, and I'm on Peerless. But one day I was going by, a, about to make the first turn. And I saw a vehicle coming towards me, made a turn, starts coming towards me. And it's a vehicle I recognized. I think it's the first time I've actually seen one in front of me. Because it was just an ordinary, kind of looking in general, except has was painted and so forth. And on top, it has this tower with this big ball on top with a whole bunch of cameras. It's the Google Street View cameras. So I looked and I says, I recognize them. And I figured, okay, I'm getting caught. And so I looked. I went immediately, when I got home, I went and looked. And I saw that the images online at the time were a couple of years old and didn't have the entire neighborhood, including a lot of the houses that had been built since. So, which is, acceptable. So, you can see that. But I checked yesterday, day before, whatever, and the updated pictures are there. And yes, indeed, so am I. So I am now on Street View. The Google Street View. I have the link, I have the pictures. I did have, did capture the picture. So I have the picture on my website and there are the links to Google. So you can see it. You have to go to a particular point because obviously, the vehicle is driving and it's taking snapshots. It's not taking video, it's taking snapshots. Because it's taking high resolution pictures and so forth. Anyway, but if you look at the map, if you use the tool, you can see they have X's they put up on the ground, and you go to the particular X. That's where the image was taken. And there's one particular place. If you go back, I'm not there. You go to it, I'm right there. You go to the next one, I'm not there. Because obviously, as the vehicle moves, it and so forth. But it's there. My face is blurred. But that's me. You'll recognize the boots, the pants, and the shirt and whatnot. It's just my normal me and my bag, the two bags, because the one bag was the heavier bag that was pretty much empty at the time. This is where I put all my stuff when I go to the store. But I have a second bag, which is a very light bag. This is where my overflow stuff comes. For example, when I go get bananas, they go in that bag so they don't get squished. When I have, cheese, for example, the cheese goes in the firm bag, and the bananas go in the loose bag, so I don't come home with squished bananas. But on the way out, sometimes, because obviously that day I was going to the farmer's market and recycling center. And because same place. Because I take the plastic water bottles because I get my gallon water bottles and I can't get a glass, so I get a plastic. And so I get a bunch of those, I squish them, put them in this lighter bag, and I carry it there, and that's what's in that bag. So you see the bag that's kind of full? It's full of plastic water bottles. So I've given away the store. what came to mind when I saw that was Jim Cross's comment. Because if you look at that guy, one of the things my wife married was the guy who had the, as are known as love handles. They at your side, you have stuff where you can grab and squish. I haven't had that for a couple of years. There is still a little bit, especially of late, and I think especially because of winter, I've been trying to eat more because I am cold because I don't have any padding. A tiny bit of stomach has come back, just a tiny, but very little. But the side, I have nothing there. So if you want to grab that, it's not there. And I would suggest part of it is diet. But I think a big part of it is the fact that when I walk, again, I walk aggressively. So, I'm not moseying along. I'm moving. I think that's one of the impacts that you see, and in the way I look physically. So you can look at that picture. That guy walked that Google knows amount. You know, it was because remember when I was a kid, I was one of the nicknames I was given as an 8, 10, 12 year old was Fatso. And then it was like, I don't think it was this year, I think it was last year, or, I mean 2021, at the farmer's market, within like 2 weeks, two different people said, "You're thin." And it was kind of like, that's not what I was. And so I think my walking and, of course, my diet, a fundamental aspect of the diet is I'm off sugar, refined sugar. And I've been off refined sugar for, like, say, about it. Yeah. I guess it has. It's been a decade. I've been off of refined sugar for a decade. Does it make a difference? I think it does. Anyway. So that's about me. But there was something else. I'm going to leave a link. It's called The Ukraine Conflict, a Primer, or he calls it a primer. There's a gentleman who lives in Ukraine. He was born in Chile, grew up in the U.S., I think that's right, has done quite well monetarily, has done a lot of stuff. He's done some movie production. I don't think he was in, but you know, a producer or whatever. And so he's made. And one of the things I found about him, he's an articulate speaker, articulate in the sense not of the oh, I want to hear him kind of thing, but the content is full and clear. He does that extremely well. And he is in Ukraine, eastern part, not in the Donbass region, but a little bit to the west of it, northwest. And been there for years. He has been abducted by the Ukrainian security service and told there are certain things he must not do or say. Because he hasn't been overly flattering about the Ukrainian government. So he has been careful about that. But as far as I know, he's not on the Ukrainian kill list, which has hundreds and hundreds of people. But anyway, but he gives us this primer that's an hour long. That is probably the best compilation of not only history, but the current events and why we're here. Not just that we're here, but why we're here. And so I highly recommend it because it does not, he does not say, oh, these people are bad, these people are good. He will tell you about the problems of both sides. But the thing that I also found so extremely important, he says it a little bit differently than I do, but he said basically the same thing. There's the political entity of Ukraine, and there's the political entity of Russia. There's the cultural people of Ukraine and the cultural people of Russia within the political entity of Ukraine. And he describes that and the importance of it. His wife is Ukrainian. I really... You know, because there's a whole bunch of stuff out there, and most everything is going to say, I have this particular mindset or bias. And he's not pure, but this is probably the best that shows evidence and does not simply sensationalize. And I really recommend it. I can't recommend it more highly. You know, it's what's his name? Oliver Stone did several, Ukraine on Fire, because I mentioned them many, many months ago. which I thought were well done, you know, because he interviewed a lot of the people, some of the former leaders of Ukraine and so forth before the, he explains a lot of the thing during the Maidan revolution and so forth. He's interviewed Vladimir Putin directly and things of that nature. But it gives you kind of a, I think it's well done. It's very classy and very polished, but I think it gives you kind of the Russian tilt, which I think that's clear. But this guy, I really think, I you know, especially if you say, all right, I have a particular bias and, you know, go USA or go Russia or whatever, you know, for someone who doesn't follow this, or has been entrenched in, you know, Fox News and CNN or some of that nature, I really think this would be a really helpful thing if you can listen and think, which, you know, that cuts the audience down dramatically. But, and again, because I want to get to my kids, the thing I want them to think about is take that as a framework, but then spread it to the worldwide situation. Because, you know, I mentioned, you know, so many people are talking about, we used to have the motto, post the fall of the Soviet Union. You know, and the Soviet Union collapsed with the sign of a pen, not with a revolution, with a whole bunch of, you know, well, there was a little bit, but that's but minor compared to what's happening in Ukraine right now, for example. Then there's the, but so we had the duopoly of the U.S. or the West and the Soviet Union. Well, now we have the U.S. as the world hegemony. But we're collapsing. And the rise is seen in a lot of ways. It's seen with BRICS. And it's seen with Russia by itself, China by itself, India by itself, South Africa. Because Libya and South Africa, Nigeria to a degree, I think. I don't know. I don't know how far down they are. South Africa and Libya were economically the dominant countries in Africa. And of course, we were unfriendly to Libya. So they haven't bounced back. Whereas, the issues that happened in South Africa are long enough in the past that economically they become very, you know, very strong again. They still have their issues, but being part of the consortium of BRICS, helps them a lot. And then, of course, the same thing is true with Brazil, obviously. But so you see that rise of the individual countries, and you see the collective itself, and you see the fall happening of the West, whether Western Europe or the US and Canada. It's happening in several ways, militarily and economically. We even see, I think, in a lot of ways, respect a decline in the prominence of the UN, because it's become a political tool. So, you know, and as I pointed out, you know, well, one, you have to have that world perspective in mind. Things, the monopolar, we went from a bipolar to a monopolar, and now we're going to a multipolar world. You know, there isn't a single dominant entity. You know, that might may change, you know, 10, 20 years. But what happens is, because the U.S. has been on top, we don't want to be not on top. So we have a variety of interests. One of the interests is the military-industrial complex. So we had the cash cow of Afghanistan. We had the cash cow of Syria. Lesser with Libya and Yemen and places like that, and Somalia and whatnot. Those were smaller. Syria was, because we're still there. Remember, you know, we are concerned about an invading country in Ukraine. There's an invading country in Syria. It's us. You know, something like a quarter or a third of the country is still under U.S. control. The U.S. military is there in Syria. We're invaders. And what are we doing there? protecting those who are stealing the oil, just as Donald Trump said. But anyway, we're still there. So we are the invader. But Afghanistan collapsed. We lost, just like we lost in Vietnam, just like we lost in Syria, except for that region that we're kind of protecting. But we lost in the other areas. And we're losing in Ukraine. I mean, we are losing. You have a lot of PR saying, oh, go USA, but no, we're losing. So that's going to collapse, and we need to shift it to something else. So there's saber-rattling going on in order to keep the military-industrial complex busy as they can be, and to try to maintain that the monopoly of the U.S., because we're losing it economically and so forth. You know, the petrodollar is collapsing. So we need to rattle some chains. Where is the obvious place to rattle? Iran. And so what happened recently? There was, if you look at the news from the West, somebody, and I don't know if anybody has claimed responsibility yet, but clearly the allegation is the U.S. Israel, mostly focused on Israel, sent, I think it's like 3 drones into Iran to bomb a facility, apparently, that manufactures drones. And I think the West, you know, admits, yeah, 2 were shot of the air before they ever got near the target. And what they're trying to say with the videos and so forth, that 1 hit the target. Whereas Iran has said, yes, we shot 2 out of the air before they did any damage. And the other one we shot out of the air above the facility. So fragments fell on this facility and caused basically no damage. Fragments falling on a roof. And so, but no damage, no explosion kind of thing. Well, apparently they show a video of an explosion. So I don't know what they're showing, if that's when the drone is hit, or I'm not sure. I don't have a clear explanation of what actually happened. And of course, either side will tell you differently. But that's the incident. What is the incident for? You know, part of the concern is Iran apparently has sold drones to Russia, and Russia has used them in Ukraine. So these drones cost, I think, $30,000 to $60,000, whatever it is. And we take $2 million missiles to shoot them out of the air. And fairly successfully. Ukraine says we shoot them all or 99% of them out of the air. But a whole bunch of them hit. It's kind of like, there's a problem here. What's the reality? I don't know. But there is talk that there's kind of a licensing agreement where Russia is actually making or will be making the drones themselves, because Russia and Iran are, for the most part, allies. Because they're on speaking terms. But what was necessary is we need another target. So, you know, Israel has been saber-rattling with Iran for years. But there's an issue. Israel's also cozied up with Saudi Arabia. And, you know, over the last couple of years, which is interesting because they are against Syria. The Golan Heights belongs to Syria. The UN says the Golan Heights belongs to Syria. The US and Israel says the Golan Heights belong to Israel. So that's been a long-running conflict. So you have that, the tension between, but Syria is mostly a secular country, because you have you have a Christian community, you have a, you know, an atheist community, you have, well, there's the Kurdish community, there's the Sunni and the Shia Muslims in that country living together. So it is more of a secular country. Israel, obviously, Zionist. I wouldn't call them Judaism, Zionism. Saudi Arabia is Sunni Muslim. Iran is mostly Shia Muslim. There's been tension between Saudi Arabia and Iran for years and years and years because they're on the wrong side of Islam. And Israel has been cozying up at developed diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia and Iran are doing the same. They're on the different side of Islam, but they're also both major oil producers and things of that nature. So the tension of the different perspective of Islam is lessening, because a whole bunch of people from Iran do go to the Hajj in Saudi Arabia. But anyway, those mix of tensions and how those things are changing is interesting. So when this drone attack occurs, it seems to be there to inflame, to give an excuse to somehow get a war going with Iran. The problem is, Saudi Arabia won't be an ally to that. You know, it's often joked, why did Iran build a country in the middle of a whole bunch of U.S. air bases? Because, you know, if you look at it, we basically encircle them, you know, on the west, the east, and you know, sort of the south, not the north, because that's Russia. And there's tension. And of course, there's longstanding tension. Because remember, a lot of people are saying, oh, Iran is so bad because of the 79 revolution when Ayatollah Khomeini came in and booted the U.S. out. That was bad, wasn't it? Why did that happen? Because in 1953, the U.S., CIA specifically, on behalf of BP, British Petroleum, and various oil companies, overthrew the government of Iran because they were going to nationalize the oil. Mossadegh, the prime minister, was saying, you know, we have foreign companies coming in order to steal from us, to harvest all this and give us nothing or little. So what we're going to do is nationalize. I don't know if it's nationalize the oil fields or even the companies themselves. I don't know. I don't know the details to that depth. But anyway, that was the reason why, with the help of the CIA, the country was overthrown and the Shah of Iran was installed. He was a U.S. puppet. The reason when things collapsed, where did the Shah go? To the United States, because we gave him sanctuary. Because he was our friend. He was our puppet. It's the same thing with Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines. When he fell, it became the United States because he was our puppet. The overthrow in 79 was basically kicking the U.S. out because we were the invader. So now for the last, 40 years, they call it the Islamic Republic of Iran. So, you know, because this was the Islamic Revolution. The issue is it's Shia Muslim instead of Sunni Muslim. And it is not 100%. It's not like Saudi Arabia. If you're not a Sunni Muslim, you might die. If you're a Sunni Muslim and convert to Christianity, you will die. You will be beheaded. It's against the law. And it happens constantly. So in Iran, there's a Jewish community, there's a Christian community, and there's a Sunni community. obviously dominated by the Shia community. So is it a level playing field? Not quite. But it is not what it's being made out to be. Because what you have to do is make them look like a target. And so when they do the thing of producing drones that are cheap and have been very effective in Ukraine, being used by the Russians, that gives us a impetus to say, oh, let's cause some disruption. Let's rattle some chains and whatnot and say, look, they're bad because they make these drones, so we're going to destroy that. We fail at doing that, but it increases the tension. And that's the concern, because the tension, you know, because you will see in Iran, in a lot of their parades, you will see signs, death to Israel. And you obviously you see in Israel, death to Iran, we wipe them off the map, those kind of expressions. It's constant. There was the Netanyahu many years ago did this presentation and complete garbage. But Iran is so bad, we got to wipe them off the face of the earth. Because, again, you need the enemy. And it's the political enemies. The people are not the enemies. It's the political enemies that are fighting this. And in the wake of that, people are destroyed and hate is fueled. And that's the problem. So the landscape is going to change. I grew up during the Vietnam War. We had a certain mindset in the U.S. It's very clear that 9/11, 2001, changed the U.S. because we put in temporary measures to protect us. And they're renewed every year now for over 20 years. So we changed culture, and the loser in that was the U.S. in that we've become more of a monitored society and regulated society. You know, it used to be you could go to the airport and walk around. I did that as a kid and get in an airplane with just walking onto it. You know, it's kind of like, gee. Oh, yeah. Was it so many years ago? There was an airline, I forget what it was called, because I flew it once, where it was no ticket counters, nothing. You simply grab your bag and walk into the plane. If there's seats available, just walk into the plane. No tickets. And then they take off and they go around and everybody pays. It's the model that you find in Europe on the train system. Get on the train system. You can get on the train to go a long distance, and then you pay your ticket once you're in. You know, if there's a seat available, you can get it. If there's no seats available, well, and it works. And so this airline did that. But, you know, doing that today, well, you have to, you can't get by without a ticket and whatnot. It's ridiculous. And, of course, for me, last several times I flew, extra security, because this could be a bad man. Anyway, but so we saw the cultural change with 9/11. We saw the cultural change with COVID-19 because I'm afraid of you. And that's the whole point. 9/11, I'm afraid of those, afraid of the Muslim terrorist. Now I'm afraid of everybody because they may have a disease. And more structure has been put in place. And then, of course, the other thing we have is we're afraid of those invaders of Ukraine. Ukraine, a peaceful, loving country. And it really is interesting. There's a lot of internal purges going on right now within Ukraine because the leadership is collapsing. There's question of this one helicopter crash of a week or so ago that a lot of their top-level people were on and died. And whether or not this was an accident or happen on purpose. Numerous people are executed who were in leadership by the leadership. And so there, you know, the collapse, I think, is near term. I really think it's near term. So we need a new boogeyman, because we don't want to look at, you know, it's kind of like you're going to blame somebody about what happened in Afghanistan. No, we forgot about that because our focus is Ukraine. We forget about the fact we went into Afghanistan on a lie, spent over, you know, trillion plus dollars, lost a bunch of lives of our own, and killed a whole bunch of them, just like we did in Vietnam. But we got to forget about that. So move to Ukraine. And that's the thing that's changing the world, right? And again, same thing is happening. The Ukrainian military is being devastated. And so are the people. Several million people have left the country because it's kind of like, it's not a good place to be. This was happening beforehand because they were known as the most corrupt country in Europe. And so as it collapses, you know, we have to say, all right, this collapses just like Iran. So we need to make our exit a little bit better than we did from Afghanistan and move your focus somewhere else. Is it Iran? Is it the saber rattling that's going on with China? Because that's a real concern. Is it somewhere else? You know, a lot of focus is on Africa, and maybe we can pick one of the places where there's turmoil. There's still turmoil in Libya, obviously. There's turmoil in the Central African Republic, I think, has calmed. The Democratic Republic of Congo is having, there's too many of them. But you can find one of those and say, let's bring this up to the forefront and turn it into the news item and move our focus on Ukraine. So if we can't do it with Iran, we're not ready to do it with China. We're probably not ready to do it with Iran. We need to find another distraction. We can't do it in Venezuela because we need their oil. There are things happening in Peru and whatnot. I don't know if we have enough of involvement there to make it a distraction for the U.S. Africa seems likely as a quick and simple, you know, because Angola was the issue that we had some involvement in the 1980s and 90s, was it? And of course, there was the tension with South Africa for a long time. So that's a possibility. I don't see it happening in other parts of, you know, Eastern Europe and whatnot. Myanmar, maybe, because there's tension there, you know, because there's tension there. But anyway, the bottom line with all this stuff, another long video, the bottom line with all this stuff is the world is making a dramatic shift again. And some things I think are clear. The petrodollar is dying, which is economically the U.S.'s power, is going to collapse. To what degree, the Federal Reserve basically submits to the Bank of International Settlements, and to what degree there's going to be a fracturing there. To what degree will the Bank of International Settlements really have world control or lose a bunch of that with the rise of, you know, things like the Petro-Yuan and all these other things? The economic world is going to change radically. So the idea of the dominant U.S. dollar is not going to be what I lived through is not going to be what my kids live through. The military presence, again, the issue is one of the reasons why we're losing so badly in Ukraine, while we lost in Afghanistan, why we lose so many other places, is because our U.S. military is woke. We're more interested in the feminism and homosexuality than having a strong military. The whole reason we have the military is to feed the military-industrial complex. And it's politics, and culturally it's declining. You put up a typical U.S. serviceman against a typical Russian or Chinese serviceman, they're going to lose. And that's the problem, you know. And anyway, so we are not what we used to be. So economically, militarily, but probably the biggest thing is culturally. You know, as I pointed out yesterday, the day before, it seems to be, I don't know if it's a rebirth or it's becoming more noticeable. The influence of Christianity, you know, I saw it so many years ago in Korea, South Korea, where, you know, because I don't know if it's still true, the largest institutional church in the world is in South Korea. I don't know if that's still true, but, you know, and they do send missionaries and so forth, throughout the world, including the U.S. So, There's a strong element of Christianity there, and it impacts the culture. There's a lot of it in Africa, in various parts of Africa, which to me is amazing because, again, what is Boko Haram? Literally, no Western education. They're affiliated with ISIS. They are, you know, it's we follow the Quran. And forget the stuff that the West does, and notably Christianity. And where do they attack, especially Nigeria, the Christian schools? They go to these schools because it's, you know, common for the boarding schools kind of thing. They go attack them and kidnap large groups of kids. This is a problem. But the reason they can do that is because there's so many of it, because Christianity is strong there in a lot of places. You see Christianity in Europe kind of being, we have plenty, you know, all these buildings, but we don't have Christianity. We don't see it in, we see the same thing, you know, if Christianity is defined by Joel Osteen, that's wow. And, you know, I mean, that's, you know, or by the Christian Zionists who are basing their hope on a falsehood or a misrepresentation of the truth, I would suggest. And, you know, obviously, you know, especially the Orthodox Church is strong in Russia, so they must be bad. And they don't want any part of us because of our culture. And you know, China is dominated by atheism. But, you know, the house churches there are strong. And, apparently, you know, cause right now there is I've got it. I haven't watched it. There's a lot of promotion going on about how Hinduism is growing stronger within India, and one of the tensions is with the Muslim community within India, and it's getting violent because, again, India and Pakistan used to be part of the same entity, and they split because Pakistan is the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, and India is basically Hindu, but there is a Christian community there too, as well as Muslim community. But that tension is growing, apparently, radically. You know, this is what happened with Kashmir, which is an area of conflict. And India has changed the terms there. Started a couple years ago, and the tension is still strong. But anyway, so all those things are happening. But the big issue is, I think the economic impact to my kids will be noticeable. The fact that the military dominance will be basically gone will be noticeable. But the cultural decline will be the worst part of it. I really think it's going to be the worst part of it. And the question is what to do about it. And the answer is, oh, this is getting long. I guess I'll have to tell you later. I made 250,000 jumping jacks. That's more than most people do in their entire life. And I did it in 2 years. I'm healthy. I made a promise to my wife to do what I can to live to be 90. The fact in the last several days, I did, you know, many thousands of jumpy jacks. I mean, 40,000 jumpy jacks in January in order to make the two-thirds goal. I'm healthy. I haven't eaten sugar, basically. It's been off my diet. You know, obviously I do get it occasionally when I'm out and things of that nature. You know, but I've been off of sugar for 10 years. I rarely eat out. I eat very healthy. And the odds of me living to be 90, because of health, is very strong. My dad lived to be, you know, a few months shy of that. 2 months shy of that, I think. So I have it my heredity. My mom and dad both got to 89. I'm in excellent health and getting closer to the 90. there could be external forces that could bring about my demise. So it's not guaranteed, but the odds are strong. Unless something else happened, if it's due to health alone that brings my demise, I'll probably make 90. I'll probably fulfill the promise I made to my wife. Just like the other promise that I've made and I continue to fulfill, that she is my one and only lady. That won't change. My lady, my wife. In this short video, let me remind you, I love you and I want you back.